Welcome to Disney A, the Canadian-themed Disney travel podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Brandon.
And I'm Krista. Hi, Brandon.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
Good.
We were actually traveling last week.
We were. We did a live-ish.
Live-ish.
Live-ish. On location. I keep saying live, but it was on location.
It was on location. Yes. From our Airbnb.
Yes, at the Calgary Comic Expo. Comic Convention and Expo. Whatever the full name is, that's where we were. It was fun. Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what we talked about last week. So everything kind of got like shifted a week or so.
Yeah, and now we're back home.
Yep.
And the sound's probably a little better.
Probably.
And yeah. So what are we talking about this week then, Krista?
This week we are talking about Mandalorian Season 3.
Oh, yeah. That happened.
That did happen. Yeah, plus, hey, you're welcome for traveling. Now you got, listeners got a chance to catch up if they were any episodes behind.
Like, good point.
For 2 weeks. What is your, before we get into that, Brandon, what is your nerd thing this week? Oh, that coffee's strong. I'm drinking coffee. That's my drink today.
Well, other than like recovering from a weekend of nerdiness.
Oh, so much fun.
And of course, hockey goes on. Ooh. at least for a couple more games.
Be optimistic. You're wearing a Leafs onesie.
I'm trying to be optimistic.
Wait, you're wearing a Leafs onesie and a Kraken hat.
Yeah.
I like it.
But other than that, a new patch came out in World of Warcraft this week, and so I was playing that a little bit yesterday, and
I was wondering if that's what you were
getting
doing.
Ready to start the raid next week and things like that.
When does that start?
Well, we're running it on Saturday, but I won't be there.
No, you're going to be at your soon-to-be brother-in-law's bachelor party. Yeah, soon-to-be brother-in-law. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
That's how.
That was confusing to you.
Yes.
Oh yes. Boy.
Hey, I have not had this cup of coffee yet, so it's a good thing it's strong. Also, you are also drinking coffee. I kind of buried that.
You ruined the surprise. Yeah, this is Sunday morning recording.
So you can record and I can edit before the hockey game.
Yeah, because I was playing World of Warcraft yesterday. World of Warcraft. Too late to record, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. My nerd thing is, on Friday, we played Dungeons & Dragons.
We did, yes.
And we killed Vecna.
We did indeed kill Vecna, yes. We were very inspired by Stranger Things. I think that's why our group decided to do a Vecna campaign.
Yeah, we were picking between, I think, two or three campaigns and decided to embrace the Stranger Things.
That was a pretty fun campaign.
It was really fun.
We had some interesting ending bits.
You gotta love it when our DM, who's just freaking awesome, is like, okay. Huh.
Yeah. There was some not safe for work content, and but no one rolled to seduce the dragon. I was very sad.
I would have. I honestly would have. I was ready. I was excited to do it, and then someone else convinced the dragon to be their friend instead. So, oh well. Okay.
But yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, very cool.
Yes, so that was a pretty nerdy thing.
Very nerdy.
But it was fun. It was very fun.
Of course.
Yeah. Alrighty, and I think that's it before we head to the news. Do you have anything else to add?
Well, did you want to talk about what we watched last night, or the night before, I guess?
I had it in the news, but we can watch it now instead.
Well, yeah, because we usually do, like, the Marvel
sure,
Minute.
Sure, yeah, so this wasn't a minute, this was a movie. Marvel movie.
A Marvel movie minute.
Yeah, Marvel movie minute. We have a new Guardians film. Okay, we went and we watched this Friday night, opening night. What did you think?
No spoilers.
No spoilers. Initial gut reaction, spoiler-free. Brandon, go.
It's good. It's a little too long, if you ask me.
I didn't find that as much as you did, but okay.
It's still good. It's definitely a Guardians movie.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely tell, and James Gunn has admitted this, when he made the first Guardians movie, he basically wanted to make his own Star Wars.
Right-ish. Mm-hmm.
Star Wars inspired. And,
yeah, I think he said Star Wars, but not Star Wars.
Yeah.
This is the quote. Yeah.
Like, he wanted to make a offbeat space opera. And
yeah.
He certainly succeeded, especially with the first one. And
right.
There was a lot of nods to that in this one. It felt very Star Wars-y as well. But I also felt that he's, like, definitely preparing for his career as the head of DC, because there was a lot of slow-mo, too, and it felt...
Right? Okay. I was like, I mean, they've always had some slow-mo because that, like, yeah, lends itself well to that whole tone. But
there was a lot.
Yeah. I mean, not quite DC level a lot, but, like, maybe the most slow-mo in a Marvel movie up to this point.
Yeah.
So. Without spoiling, one after-credit scene at the very end. So stay to the end.
There's two. There's a mid-credit.
Would you consider that mid-credit?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
It was in the middle of the credits.
Well, it was pretty early into the credits. I didn't know if I was going to say that was mid-credit.
So there's a mid-credit and an after credits at the very end.
Okay. I would say that's early credits, not mid-credits, but okay.
It's literally called a mid-credit scene. Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, I really liked it.
That's good.
Yeah. Did you really like it?
Yeah.
If you were to rank...
I can't really say much more without being spoilery, so...
That's fine. If you were to rank the three, though...
I would say this is... on par with the second one, or maybe slightly better.
Yep, that's where I'm at. But I didn't dislike the second
one. The first one is, like, one of my favorite MCU movies, yeah, so it's tough to compare, yeah, but, you know.
Whatever. It did, I, anyone who asked, I said it is, it was solid. Like, it was a solid.
Yeah, I think also the reviews for this one were a little more fair than they were on Ant-Man.
Yeah.
I thought the reviewers, like, skewered Ant-Man unfairly, and that was a fun movie, too. Like, this isn't leagues better than Ant-Man, although the reviews would say otherwise. Like,
right.
It got better reviews.
I feel like it's...
But I thought they were fair.
Yeah.
Fair good reviews. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, so let's head to the news now.
Disney A News Update.
Okay, speaking of Guardians, we have some Guardians Park news. Mantis appeared for the first time in a Disney park.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, we've seen it. The little show that kind of happens outside of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, below the Quinjet thing.
Yeah. Well, just the Guardians one, like the dance-off
kind of
thing.
Oh, they do the little
dance-off,
yeah.
I think that's the one because it said that she randomly joined Star-Lord outside of, like, for a mini show outside of the Mission Breakout.
Oh, okay.
So I'm assuming that's the same kind of show.
Yeah, the dance-off thing. Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. Also, there are two new sippers since the last time we talked about it, but the one that came out this week is the Guardians of the Galaxy Milky Fizz, which is like, yeah, it looks like kind of like a milk carton, sort of.
Okay.
And it has, like, Guardians writing on it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's Kree writing. The Guardians writing. That's interesting. They should also sell Zargnuts, I think.
I think they should. Why have you not started selling Zargnuts yet?
Like, that would be easy enough, like,
totally.
Chocolate-covered peanuts
they
or something.
They
like...
too. Or, like, they look to me like Cocoa Puffs, mm-hmm, almost, right? Literally get Cocoa Puffs and sell them, and I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'm having Zargnuts.
And then you could eat them very slowly, mm-hmm, and no one would notice.
Brandon kept doing that with the popcorn at the movie.
It worked. No one knew.
I knew.
No, you didn't.
Also, speaking of Disneyland, well, DCA, the Incredicoaster Inside Out Emotional Whirlwind Jumping Jellyfish, they will now be running during World of Color 1. So this is kind of cool. You could, like, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So this was kind of rumored for a bit and then they confirmed. Yeah, like, any day now.
Are they going to run them dark? Because, like, they usually turn off all the lights around DCA.
I have no idea what this is going to look like. We're going to have to watch a video once it, like, becomes more common.
I think it would be fun to be on, like... Emotional Whirlwind or something.
That would be a good one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you get a decent view of the park. Like, it's not a very long ride, so you wouldn't get much view, but... They're running those, but not the Ferris wheel, hey?
Apparently, that's what it says. Maybe that's too bright.
And too close, probably.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But very cool, anyway. I think it'd be cool to try. I'm going to have to look this up on a video of it. Also, you know how I said that Alice in Wonderland, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Peter Pan, and Ariel's Undersea Adventure were all going to be closed for refurbishment, and that seemed weird?
Mm-hmm.
So we have both closing dates and reopening dates. Ariel is the quickest one. They all close June 5th, but Ariel is going to be open June 8th. Alice and Mr. Toad are going to be open June 16th, and there's no reopening date for Peter Pan yet.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's, I figured it would be quick for most of them, but...
Well, I don't
Peter
know.
Pan being down is gonna that's gonna Oof. Hurt Fantasyland
it
hard.
It really
yeah.
is. I prepare for Alice lineups to be insane once that June 16th
opens. No kidding.
Because that's always next lineup anyway. So
yeah, because it's kind of it's also a slower loader and it's more involved than the other dark rides, I think, because it's like double level and goes inside and out. And yeah. Okay. Well, that's too bad for...
Hopefully Peter Pan gets reopened soon. More signing and theming are up at Pacific Wharf.
That's actually weird timing for Peter Pan to be closed, too.
Okay, yeah. Peter Pan and Wendy.
Sorry, I'm going back. But just because they released the new live-action Peter Pan and Wendy or whatever it's called.
That's what,
On Disney Plus, so which we didn't talk about. But, yeah.
We haven't seen it yet. You should watch it.
I haven't seen it yet. I don't know. I've not heard great things, but...
I'll probably watch it this summer, like, randomly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that is weird timing, and, like, school's gonna be out then, and just, I don't know. I wonder if they're, like...
Yeah, because schools close early June in the States.
Or end of May.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, most of the teacher stuff I follow, like, Instagram and Facebook and stuff, it's out of the States, and oof. But also, they're, like, ready to close in a couple weeks here, basically. Two or three weeks.
Yeah, they're out June, July, and go back August-ish sometime, usually.
Yeah. Depends on the district, but that tends to be the thing. And especially, like, that local area. That's why we should go to Disneyland sometime in August, because I'll be off, and there won't be, like, apparently that's a great time to go.
Yeah.
Because things are still open, but the crowds are way less, because all the kids are back at school. So... Hint, hint, sometime.
And I have a lightsaber collection to grow.
That wasn't your nerd thing?
No.
Oh, do you want to say it now?
No.
Okay. Fine, then.
Maybe next week.
Okay.
That's a teaser.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's not that exciting. No.
But yeah, so there's more signing and theming going up at Pacific Wharf. There was like the little cat decal on the side of the building. They're at the point now where I think it's mostly like just finishing touches, kind of, or I'm not sure what the date looks like.
The big project was the bridge facade, and they did that first and got her mostly done, and the rest is just a little bit of paint and stickers.
Yeah, and moving some stuff around, and there's like switching around some windows and stuff.
Making
like
room
that,
for Baymax to come out. And
making room for Baymax.
I would stand in line for Baymax.
I think we should actually. Like, we don't really stand in line for characters.
I want to give him a fist bump. Probably has to do that like 50 times a day.
Don't care. 51. May the 4th celebrations were happening at the Disney parks. There was Star Wars night, of course. Pictures always looked awesome. This is a Disney bucket list item for us, actually.
Yeah, they go all out for Star Wars night, and you get to see a lot of characters that you would never, ever, ever see
so cool.
any other time, so.
I just saw stuff on Instagram, but I do want to watch the videos, like the YouTube on YouTube and stuff. Hyperspace Mountain is, of course, running this month. There is the other sipper I mentioned, what is a baby Yoda sipper, and he's holding, like, the little cup.
Oh, so like you're sipping out of his head while he's sipping out of a cup?
Yes. Or like he's not sipping out, he's holding it, and there's a froggy in it. Like he's going to eat it.
But you're drinking his brains.
No, that is not what you were doing. It is cute. Don't make it gross.
You're stealing his midichlorians to make clones.
It's cute. Shut up. Here, I'll show you a picture. And I also did share it on
It's a bouncy frog.
Yeah, the frog. Is that not cute? Yeah, so okay, you are sipping out of his head. But anyway, it's cute. But the little frog does bounce, and anyway, it's really cute.
I would buy the heck out of that sipper.
Oh, yes, I would as well. I think it's awesome. Sippers are just so problematic. They're so good. Also, there were Star Wars food-themed items. Speaking of food-themed items, there are Mother's Day food items. Mother's Day is next weekend, by the way, if you have forgotten. Here's your warning. You have a couple days. You're going to be...
Shout out to moms.
Shout out to moms. You are going to be at the bachelor party, so...
Sorry, Mom.
And also for Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, DCA is doing a bunch of foods and stuff. And Downtown Disney. Looks
Pacific
really
Islander
good.
Would be good to have food.
Oh, yeah.
They have good food.
They have such good food. I was looking at some of the pictures going like, okay, yep. Mm-hmm, that sounds all good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen. We have seen this is coming. They now have the signage up and the color scheme is mostly done. I don't know if they have like finishing details or not, but what do you think? This is that bright orange and pink. Instead of Ralph Brennan's, I think it's now just called the Jazz Kitchen.
It's not quite as bad as the concept art was, but it still looks like a mall cafeteria now.
Yeah,
it has
I don't
no
know.
it has no character anymore, and it used to have a lot of character.
Yeah.
But that's what they're going for. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm hoping to see it in person. It does look better than the concept art, but I grumble. But the Express Beignets window has now reopened.
That's the important, truly. That is what matters.
It is true. And then my other news item was the Guardians movie. So, do you have any news items to throw in there?
I did hear. Oh, that is one news item. The whole writer's strike is going on again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It seems like just yesterday that there was a writer's strike, but that was also like 15 years ago.
So long ago. We got Dr. Horrible sing-along blog out of it.
Yeah. It's too bad that Joss Whedon is disgraced and shut in his million-dollar mansion now that they can't make another one.
Yeah.
It'd be perfect chance to make a sequel to Dr. Horrible.
He's been talking about doing a sequel for years, and then I stopped doing a sequel.
But yeah, so writer strike, that's causing a lot of problems for companies like Disney and everything, because they can't do production with writers on set because they're striking, obviously.
Yeah.
And one of the main things that is being hurt by this, the Blade movie, which was supposed to go into shooting in June, has been postponed
until the writer's strike figures
again. So yeah, that movie's having no luck whatsoever.
No, but that doesn't mean that it's like, I don't know. We'll see. But I'm so excited for the Blade movie. And now that is one thing, though. They were trying to time that right with, like, Halloween-type things. And, of course, anything in the MCU, you postpone one thing and it, like, shifts everything else around. And, oh, okay, well, we'll see what happens. But also, you know, go writers, so.
Yeah, and
it's a balancing act.
Yeah, you gotta cheer for the writers in this situation.
Yep.
They're the ones that are coming up with these concepts and everything, and I don't think they're getting their fair share of of the money that's being generated from the billions and billions of dollars. So, yeah, no, the writers deserve it.
Yep, cheer for the writers, and then pay the writers, and then get back to making Blade. Mm-hmm. in a nutshell. Thank you, I fixed it. Basically?
Sure.
Okay, let's head to the main topic.
Disney Plus and chill.
Okay, Mando season 3. So we were saying it's been a couple weeks now since we finished this one up. So I thought I would give like an overall rundown, and then let's talk like favorites and least favorites and overall impressions.
You have to refresh my memory because so much has happened since then. I forget.
Okay. Well, there are 8 episodes, and it is now listed as starring both Pedro Pascal and Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah.
So the
Boba Fett show was Mando season 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was the 0.5 of Mando, but it was also season 1 of the Bo-Katan show.
It's true.
She was clearly the main character of this season, and that's fine. Like, I thought it was a good arc.
You know what, though? Mando still got some really cool moments, and I can't say that's always true for these overlapping promoting things.
Right.
But, okay, so here's your general. The 8-episode season premiered on the streaming service on March 1st and ran until April 19th. So like we said, you got a couple weeks there. It received generally positive reviews from critics, especially for praise for the performances, musical score, direction, cinematography, and action sequences. There was some criticism for writing and pacing, but the 4th season is in development, and overall it was fairly positive.
Yeah, I can see all that. They still use the volume but that's like kind of the Mandalorian look, so that's okay too.
Yeah.
But they had some pretty good non-volume stuff in like the Coruscant episode, especially.
I really like that episode. Yeah,
was like, but then again, that was one of the big criticisms for the plot,
the pacing specifically.
So yeah.
Okay, so I'm just gonna kind of go through the chapters, and you can tell me, like, what you thought of it, but I'll give you a little spiel, okay?
Okay.
So.
Rapid fire!
Alright, chapter 17 was the apostate. This is them, this is when we have the pirate scene right away, and also that they're trying to get IG-11. That was the droid that gave up his life. Would you say life? existence, I guess. Oh,
we do not have time to get into the ethical considerations of droids as sentient beings in the Star Wars universe.
Can we do a whole episode on it?
Oh my goodness. I don't even think I want to tackle, like, that's university level ethics stuff.
That sounds and so it's, fun.
I don't know. Okay. They don't, the Clone Wars went into pretty good on, like, the ethics of the clones.
Yep.
But, like, they've never touched the droid thing, and it's weird because they're, mm-hmm. like, basically slaves.
Oh, boy.
And, but they're sentient.
Yeah.
But they're not.
They're also, like, reprogrammable. And like,
it's weird.
Okay. Yeah, let's not touch that. Anyway, IG-11.
IG-11. He got blown up.
He got, yeah.
Well, he blew himself up.
But anyway, they're trying to bring him back.
Because basically the story is, Mando needs a droid to go and scout out the Mandalorian planet.
Exactly.
And he only trusts one droid.
And that's IG-11.
And,
but they can't bring him back right away. Or they can't bring him back. He defaults to his original violent programming. Of course, sees Grogu right away and goes, like, destroy.
Yeah.
So they bail him down right away. We also have, and even in this first episode, Djarin meets up with Bo-Katan. And on an old Mandalorian castle, but she has abandoned basically all of her plans to reclaim Mandalore at this point after losing the Darksaber and is basically like, you're on your own.
Cool.
Cool. But we have, like, cool pirate scene and a little bit of space battle, and yeah. It's an establishing episode.
I'm a pirate.
Chapter 18 is The Mines of Mandalore. Djarin visits Pelimoto on Tatooine, trying to look for a new memory chip for IG-11. She doesn't have one, but does sell a new droid.
We didn't talk about, like, Mando wants to go back to Mandalore because the armorer tells him, well, he took your helmet off, so you're no longer a true Mandalorian unless you go have a bath in the living waters.
Right, so this was actually from Boba Fett. This was, you know, Mando season 2.5.
Yeah, they talk about it in the first episode.
They do, yeah, they do, like, a little recap kind of thing. But yes, you're right. I definitely should have prefaced that. So
he's just not like looking for a cool vacation. He's got a reason to go there.
He's got a purpose. So we did get our Pelimoto moment in there. We also have, then Djarin does make it to, Mando does make it to Mandalore, and he has this new droid, R5D4.
He's the red droid from the original Star Wars movie that blows its motivator so that R2 gets bought by Luke and Uncle Owen.
Yes, and it is now widely believed that was intentional, which is...
Because there's been some comments about how he worked for the Rebel Alliance, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I like it. I like that canon. Yes. So that's really cool. So we get to hang out with him a little bit, and he's supposed to go scout ahead, but when he doesn't return, Mando's like, cool, and so he goes into the mines. He's attacked there when he heads into the caves.
The cool creature thing that they don't really explain, but they don't need to, because it's just a cool robot, organic-y robot
thing.
Kind of like General Grievous was
mostly
robotic, mm-hmm. but had some original organic thing at the center. That this was similar to that, except, like, even probably less.
Yeah, I got serious Grievous vibes from this one. Mm-hmm. For
very
sure.
Cool.
Grogu is understands that dad is in trouble, and I love how, especially Bo-Katan, always says that he's his dad. I'm like, oh, he is so cute. So he takes off, and he actually is able to get the ship back to Bo-Katan, and leads her to go save Mando. She, the cyborg creature, he didn't even get a name, did he?
No.
He's captured Mando and, like, taken his possessions and stuff like that.
Spider bot murder thing.
Cool. I like it. Yeah. Descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
So she sees the Darksaber there and uses it to kill spider bot murder thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
very, very cool. She kicks some butt.
It was a seriously cool moment.
Because, like, Mando's been having trouble with the Darksaber. Yep. It's a little, it doesn't really like him, and he doesn't really like it. He uses it when he needs
but really
to,
doesn't
but
want to.
It's not really his thing, but she's like, that's the scientific term for it. And she's really good with it.
Yeah, like, easy. Like, had no trouble with it whatsoever. And so, like, that's interesting and pretty obvious right there. after she saves him, they head on into the waters. She's pretty cynical, you know. She says, oh, you know, being the princess, she remembers, and it was this big ceremony. He does do the bathing in the living waters, and while he's doing that, he's, like, pulled down into the water. Very trash compactory scene, actually.
Yeah, it's weird, because you, like, think it's, like, this shallow thing, and I think she thought it was this shallow thing, and he, like, just, like, bam, into this, like, 100-foot abyss.
Yeah, so she dives in to save him, but while she's down there, she comes face-to-face with... What did she come face-to-face with?
Mythosaur.
Yeah, it was, dramatic pausing for you there.
I thought you were going to say it. Anyway, yeah, so she sees a living mythosaur, which is appropriately named, because everyone thinks it's a myth.
Exactly.
But That's, of course, the traditional Mandalorian symbol that we originally saw on Boba Fett in his first appearance. That's his little crest on his shoulder. Cool. And
they're believed to be extinct.
Yeah. Or maybe never existed. They're like dragons in our world kind of thing.
And this thing is huge. So we just see that moment of with her pulling Mando up. And she's really tiny compared to him. Freaks out a little bit, comes out of the water, and we have episode 2 ending. In episode 3, which
So you're saying Bo-Katan's cynical, and it makes a lot of sense, because yes, she was this, like, princess on Mandalore, and, like, probably had her head filled with all, like, sorts of things.
Yep.
And then she was, like, a cultist when we first meet her in Clone Wars. She was part of the Death Watch.
Right.
And that didn't go very well.
No.
And so that's probably why she's a little cynical.
A little bit. Things have not been working out. And then she was on this, like, quest to, like, save her people and her planet, and that didn't go very well.
Yeah, so she has a lot of reason to be cynical. Yeah. It makes sense, yeah.
Which is interesting, because episode 3 is called The Convert. Interesting. So Bo-Katan and Mando travel back to join, I guess, with the armorer and...
She's like, I had my bath now, I'm cool again, right, guys?
Basically, like, she doesn't even intend that right away, but the armor is like, did you also go in the living water? She's like, yep. Have you removed your helmet since? Nope, cool, you're one of us now. She's like, oh, what?
Oh,
okay. Mm. Like, as long as she wants to be. It's not like she's being held there or anything.
No. She's like, oh, yeah, I guess I don't got any other friends, so that'll work.
So that might be the convert, but this is also the episode where we see Dr. Pershing? How do you say that? Pershing. And this is the Coruscant episode. So he was in season 1.
Yeah, he was the doctor that was part of the original bounty that sent Mando after Grogu to retrieve him. And he's a cloning experiment doctor.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
The Imperials. Yeah. And yeah, so this episode's bookended by some... like a little bit of Mandalorian stuff at their covert, their hidden base, dangerous planet hidden base. But then there's the main part where it's just Dr. Pershing's story on Coruscant.
Yes.
Which a lot of people felt it was a weird pacing thing. And tonally it's quite a bit different. It felt more tonally like Andor.
Yes. I felt very Andor.
I thought it was a good episode, but I agree with the pacing comment.
Mm-hmm.
I think this whole thing would have worked better, interjected in multiple episodes as like flash forward, flashback, instead of like a big chunk like that.
I agree. I agree with your,
you could have had more spy, suspense going on. And it would have felt less jarring to be gone from Mando for that long.
Yeah, you basically hit pause on this really cool moment. Bo-Katan hasn't told anyone that she's seen a Mythosaur. And then, just kidding, we're going to go talk about this other thing for a while. And I did like it, but I really, really like Andor. And I liked it because it felt like Andor.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally get the idea that it's jarring. I think your assertion that it was... really cool, but pacing has problems, and I think that would have been a good solution.
Yeah, but they kind of wanted to make a Star Wars cyberpunk Blade Runner-esque episode,
and
that's what they did. Very Blade Runner inspired, if you've never seen that, and that was clearly on purpose.
Here we also hang out with Elia Kane, who was a communications officer, part of the Moff Gideon's crew.
Super nice lady, oh, yeah, nothing wrong with her.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Definitely mm-hmm. not sneaky and murdery at all. Mm-hmm. She's, there was that moment at the end where she, like, is basically, so she betrays the doctor, anyway, sets him up to get caught, and then, like, watches his brain get scrambled.
Yeah, she's tying up loose ends for Moff Gideon.
Yeah.
Because, as we find out later, Moff Gideon's kind of got his own thing going on, even over and above what the Imperial remnants have been planning, because there's a bunch of former... The Imperial army was massive, right. So of course there's going to be some hangers-on and things like that. But yeah, he's in it for himself, and he doesn't want anybody to find out about that, because that could be dangerous as well.
Yeah, so she's tying up loose ends, and Dr. Pershing is one of those loose ends. So she, like, watches and eats a snack while his mind is...
Clearly enjoying it like a psycho.
Yeah, definitely like, ooh. And then we, like you said, head back to find the Mandalorians, and that's when they're accepting Bo-Katan as part of their group. And that's that episode. She's an interesting character, Aliyah Kane. What did you think of her? Psycho, but on that.
Yeah, clearly a sociopath, but yeah, you need some good villains, and I think that's fine. I'll be curious to see where they kind of left her mm-hmm. as a loose end, so we'll see where she pops up back up again.
That's maybe. Why I was bringing her up. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. She fits in with a show like Andor, but of course the timelines of that don't work at all. So I don't know.
The other thing that I liked about this episode was you saw a lot of like the bureaucratic craziness of this whole thing, and how it's not this shining example of, hey, things are working. Like,
no, the same corrupt politicians are fat and wealthy mm-hmm. under the New Republic as they were under the Empire. And it's a social commentary that makes perfect sense. I don't know.
So episode 4 is The Foundling. Grogu gets to start some Mandalorian combat training. His opponent, Ragnar Visla, is captured by a large raptor. Bo-Katan leads a hunting party to go save him. And Paz Visla is his father, and he's like the big guy. He's a big Mandalorian.
He's the big guy with the big gun. Chonky Mandalorian with the big chonky gun.
Yeah.
And he's the one that doesn't like Mando very much because he's if you've seen the animated things, the Vizsla family is their lineage goes back a long ways, including the original creator of the Darksaber. So he thinks he's pretty cool, and he thinks Mando's not so cool. And
yeah, basically. He's suspicious of Bo-Katan as well. Yeah. But then she leads his party to save his son, essentially. And is successful, and then he does give respect then to both Mando and Bo-Katan because of their actions in this, and they not only to save him, but also like they did it in a brave, intelligent way. And so you had some cool fight scenes that way. At the same time, Grogu's hanging out with the Armorer, and one thing about this season is we spent a lot more time with the Armorer, and we have in this episode is one where we got more Grogu flashbacks as how he escaped the Jedi Temple during Order 66 and Anakin getting all killing younglings.
Yeah.
Murdering children.
I've seen jokes about like Obi-Wan giving Luke his lightsaber in the original Star Wars movie, and it's like, here you go, here's the Youngling Killer 3000.
Oh my gosh.
Cause I mean that's yeah.
Yeah, no, it is, it happened.
Went on a good murder spree with it, so.
So the Armorer does forge a new piece of Mandalorian armor for Grogu, which was bearing Mando's Mudhorn sigil, which is kind of cool. It's like further establishing their connection. And Grogu has visions, like during all of this, of his rescue by Jedi Master Kelleran. Is that Dino?
Kelleran
Beck. And sympathetic members of the Naboo Armed Forces. So this is kind of cool, though, because we have seen the guy playing this Jedi Master. He's, like, from the animated and books, I think. He was in the books.
No, actually. he has a, like, this mm-hmm. Jedi Master has appeared before, but it was on a Star Wars themed kids game show.
Oh my goodness, that is obscure.
Yeah, so it was like, I don't even, it must have been on the Disney Channel, but they back in the 90s, 2000s, yep. they had quite a few of these kids game shows where they would send kids off on an obstacle course, and this one was Star Wars themed, and the host was a Jedi Master, and it was played by this guy, and hosted it, but he's more well known for yes. being the mocap performance capture. We watched Andy Serkis performance capture of Jar Jar Binks.
Yes, I was like, Jar Jar Binks is back, kinda. Yeah. So that was really cool.
Yeah,
I like that they used him for that.
He got to be pretty badass.
Oh,
and
save Grogu.
Save Grogu. Yeah.
I don't care who you are. If you don't love Grogu, something is wrong with you. So like, dude who saves Grogu is like. So this was really exciting, anyway. And also, and then at the end, we have Armorer having another moment with Bo-Katan. Bo-Katan reveals to the Armorer, or at least hints at, that she has seen the Mythosaur. And the Mythosaur's like, okay. We don't know if she believes her or not. She just doesn't seem like she believes her, but then later actions are like, it doesn't necessarily
doesn't matter
if she believes her or not.
She believes that Bo-Katan yes. believes, and that's good enough for her.
I really liked the Armorer in this season, and this was one of those moments when you're like, what's going on here? But really, she's like thinking about Bo-Katan now in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So then we move on to episode 5. This is the pirate. Gorian Shard invades Navarro, and so Mando convinces all of the Mandalorians that have gathered to go help, because Grief Karga had promised him like a tract of land, and he was like, we've been running and hiding, now we have this place where we can call home, and that we're like supported and welcomed on this planet, but we can do that if we go help them.
Yeah, they only have pirates there. They don't have like giant murder alligators in the lake or pterodactyles.
Yeah, it was not a great place they were hiding.
Like, the first three rules in real estate are location, location, location. They forgot that when they were picking out their cave to hide in, I'm pretty sure.
So the exactly. So they do. They go and they help, and they basically... This was a very Mandalorian-y episode,
Some great aerial battles and stuff.
Yeah, fight the pirates.
Just really cool. And the pirate in this is really cool design. Very Star Wars-y character.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of creature, mossy
super
creature
cool.
dude.
Yeah.
Very cool. And very piratey. And I even liked that his like big carrier ship had like an old school like pirate wheel
that
to
was
steer.
Really cool. Actually
doesn't make much sense, but
doesn't
it looks
matter.
Cool
but
yeah
it looks, cool.
It looks really cool.
Did that look cool? We also had Carson Teva, I don't know how you say that. He had his like bit appearance in the first one, and then I think he was in Boba Fett too, the pilot who was, I don't know how you say his name properly. But anyway, he's the one who Grief Karga contacts to try and get hold of Mando.
Oh, yes. Okay, the guy from Kim's Convenience.
Yes.
Yeah, he's the contact for the New Republic, basically.
Yeah.
He seems like the only one that actually wants to do his job. The other
yeah.
ones kind of sit around and drink in the bar. But,
yeah, pretty much.
You know.
And then he also, first of all, he goes to try and get help from the New Republic. And lovely Elia Kane here jumps in and is like, I don't think that planet like signed with us, so we shouldn't help them. She's very helpful, you know. And, you know, red tape and everything like that, so he goes to Mando. Mando, along with Vizsla and group, basically they convince all of them to help. They go, they fight the pirates, Grief Karga, and the planet welcomes the Mandalorians at that point. And this is at the end where the Armorer convinces Bo-Katan to then remove her helmet again. And I love that Bo-Katan hesitates here. She's like, it's a trap. Because the Armorer points out that Bo-Katan is the only one who has walked in both sides of the Mandalorian world. Both the traditionalists who never remove their helmets and the other ones. And so she believes that she's the one who can bring them all together. And it's kind of cool. So Bo-Katan and... Bo-Katan and Mando take off to go find more Mandalorians. This is also at the end there where we find the wreckage of Moff Gideon's prison transport, which had gone missing during transit. And there's a fragment of Beskar alloy inside. So you're supposed to be set up that they think the Mandalorians did it, but then we, like, never really return to that concept.
Yeah, you just find out that Moff Gideon has access to Beskar, which is what...
Yeah.
That was the thread. There was some thought that they were going to try and set up the Mandalorians to be, well, like, against the New Republic, and I'm glad they didn't.
No. Well, Teva's Teva, whatever his name is, Kim's convenience guy. His originally thing was, Mandalorians did this, and then it ends, so, like, you're supposed to think that, but you think that for about half a second, and then you're like, that doesn't make sense, so no.
Mm.
And he is too smart to think that as well, so he doesn't even follow that train of thought. But yeah, so that's going on, and of course we are going to have Moff Gideon back. Of course we are. So that's setting up that, hey, this is how the season's going to end. Season 6 is Guns for Hire.
Episode 6
is Guns for Hire.
We're not on season 6 yet, no.
Bo-Katan, Dinjarin, I never say it right.
Din Djarin. Din Djarin.
And Grogu, this may as well have been cameos the episode.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
So Bo-Katan's former army has been hired out as mercenaries. And so they're, like, going to go meet them. But before they do that, they're kind of the two rulers, Captain Bombardier and the Duchess, ask for their help in neutralizing several repurposed but malfunctioning Imperial and Separatist droids.
This was, like, the only episode that was, like, the adventure of the week, and it was almost like a Mission Impossible or something, just, or the A-Team, where they just go and, like, fix a problem. But yeah, it was Lizzo and Jack Black.
Yeah. And?
Yes, and then they find out the bad guy that would have gotten away with it without you meddling kids was Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, it was so cool. I couldn't believe that. It's like, Christopher Lloyd's in The Mandalorian and playing the bad guy. Anyway, I thought this episode was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It also, like, I don't know, like, it diverted from the overall arc, but, like, in a less jarring way than episode 3.
It was less jarring. It did feel like a Mandalorian, and it was fun. But the trouble is, when you have... I said this at the time, I think, when we were doing our little talks with the quick first impression of each episode, it was a good filler episode, and like, I use that term loosely, like,
not as an insult.
Not as an insult, but it was, and it would feel better if you didn't have only 8 episodes total.
Yeah, if it had been restructured so it was earlier or something.
Yeah.
But by the end, they do meet up with the former army, and Bo-Katan actually reclaims them because Mando gives her the saber. And they couldn't do that before, but then he explains about, you know, that scene where she was, like, all badass and, like, killing
Spider-Murderbot. Spider-Murderbot defeated Din, so she defeated Murder-Spider-Bot, so technically she's the rightful owner of the Darksaber through that crazy combat rule that they have, you know, whatever.
So originally they have to, like, fight, and then, like, she challenges the current leader, but they're like, but it doesn't matter, you don't have the saber, and so they all agree that is appropriate then for him to give it to her. So they don't have to kill each other, she doesn't have to physically take it, but she earns it by that way.
Yeah, and this episode was important because it, like, set up, again, Mando and Bo making, like, a good team together, because they had their problems earlier, and so they had to work back together to, they're going to be the uniting force of all the Mandalorians.
Exactly, and they represent both sides of this conflict there. Chapter 23 is The Spies, and oh my goodness, this was a cool episode. I thought this was a cool episode. So Moff Gideon is informed by Elia Kane of the Mandalorians' intent to retake their planet. Gideon relays this information to the Shadow Council. Here's your remnant warlords you were talking about.
Yep.
We also have reference, but not a sighting, of Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Yes, apparently these remnants are waiting for Thrawn to come back and storm the castle, kind of thing. So who knows?
Brendel Hux, who's like the... was it one generation removed from...
I think he's supposed to be the father of... Hux from the sequel trilogy.
Okay.
I think that lines up.
Okay. Age-wise. I know there's I know they're supposed to be related, but I couldn't remember how.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that, but I mean, it doesn't matter.
No. But it's, hey, cool, he's on the Shadow Council. Mm. They also have, that's when.
Yay, nepotism.
Yeah. and basically, but we do not see Grand Admiral Thrawn, so they're like, oh, well.
But his, from the animated, his, like, second in command is on the Shadow Council.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little mustache guy. And people are very excited about that. But we haven't seen Rebels, so I didn't
yet.
Mean anything to me.
Yet. Haven't seen it yet.
Yet. We have to watch it. We have
it was
to
very soon.
Oh, my God.
Reassembling on Navarro, Bo-Katan unites the Mandalorian clans. And they basically have a plan now to explore the surface of Mandalore and locate the Great Forge. Before leaving, Greef Karga presents an IG-12. This is adorable. This is a rebuilt version of IG-11, which is able to be controlled by Grogu.
It's a mech suit for Grogu.
Yeah, and he even gets to say yes and no. And I love him walking around to be like, yes, yes, yes,
he,
yes.
He likes his mech suit. I mean, who wouldn't want a mech suit,
it's
to
so
be honest
cool.
with you?
It's so cool, yeah. On Mandalore, the group meets another surviving clan who's actually been living on Mandalore this whole time, who's completely loyal to Bo-Katan.
The Mad Max Mandos.
Right? I was going to say, Matt, I like that. Mad Max Mandos. They even appear that way. Like, it's
oh,
crazy.
Yeah.
Bo-Katan also admits that she surrendered to Gideon shortly after the Night of a Thousand Tears, hoping her people would be spared. And so she has been blaming
Narrator,
herself.
Narrator, they were not
they were
spared.
They were not spared, no. So she's been basically blaming herself this whole time. The party does find the Grid Forge, but then is ambushed by Beskar-enhanced stormtroopers. Din Djarin is captured by Gideon, who shows up also wearing Beskar and reveals his intent to complete the Great Purge of Mandalore. He Bo-Katan uses the Darksaber to make an escape for the group, and Paz Vizsla stays behind to buy time, is killed by the crazy guards, the
Praetorian Guard.
Praetorian.
So in the original Star Wars movies, they were like the elite guard for the Emperor in the red suits and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then
red guards, I was just calling them red
yeah.
guards.
And then they there's of course the very famous duel big group fight scene
mm-hmm.
in The Last Jedi where Rey and Kylo fight the guards the
it's
Praetorian
a cool
guard
scene. Yeah.
Praetorian guards for Snoke after
mm-hmm.
after Kylo kills Snoke.
Yeah.
And so that yeah they're kind of deadly.
Yeah.
So,
and So Vizsla takes down, like, a lot, but then as soon as they show up, it's just...
Yeah, he tries to fight him, and it just doesn't...
But he's very aware. He is, like, sacrificing himself to, like, save the group, which is a very Mandalorian thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's
very happy to go out that way, let's be honest.
No, he is. He, like, that's would be his ideal. Go down in a blaze of glory,
yeah,
saving everyone else.
They have a very Viking mentality.
Yeah.
They want to, like, go to Valhalla type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
No, he's happy.
Yeah, he is this very cool moment, mm. anyway. Bo-Katan successfully, with the Darksaber, gets them going, and we leave in this moment when Mando's been captured, and everyone else is running away, and he's dying. Vizsla's dying, basically.
Yeah, it's very... Empire Strikes Back type
yeah.
ending.
But we also get the big reveal, which is they're like Greef Karga's on Mandalore. They've like have it's basically
Moff Gideon is on.
What did I say?
You said Greef Karga.
No, he's not on Mandalore.
No,
at all.
I'm like, what are you talking about? Moff Gideon has a big base on Mandalore.
Yeah.
And that's why there's no radio communication. It's not the storms.
Nope. And all of the rumors about it being uninhabitable is
him saying
yeah him saying it's
yeah.
uninhabitable.
No, you don't want to come here.
He's doing something with the Beskar, and he doesn't want anyone to know. And
maybe he's opening a chicken restaurant.
Maybe it's probably not it. No, nice reference though. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so that episode ends, and then we finally have episode 8, which is chapter 24, The Return.
But of the Jedi. No, wait, that's different.
Yeah. Before we got onto this, though, we're like, the spies. Well, who all is a spy here? Because we had Alia Kane, and we left with, like, some members of the Mandalore group. Like, the armorer has taken off. Oh, man, I don't even remember his name.
Axe Wolves?
Wolves, thank you.
Axe.
And so we're like, is one of them going to betray?
Like, yeah, they were like...
It was a weird pacing.
Seemed like they might be a little sketchy. The
mm-hmm.
armor especially was seeming pretty sketchy, and like Axe didn't seem like he was too fond of Bo-Katan, like usurping his... Because
right.
he was the leader when
totally
she
was.
Left. And
they fought and everything.
Eh. So you didn't know, like, and like he's having scuffles with some of the other Mandos, yeah. Like it was this whole thing, right?
And then he's like, "I will go get help," and then takes off. Like, you're like, what's the plural on spies? And then, of course, that just set the internet debating, especially about the armor. It's like, she's a little off. And
there were some wild theories. Like,
the helmet especially was like the big central figure.
Yeah, she's like, she's loyal to Darth Maul or something.
She has, looks like she has thorns on her helmet, apparently.
Horned helmet. She has horns on her helmet, yeah. But they're not.
It's not the same kind of horns.
It's not, and it doesn't make much sense because she's...
But there was a lot of speculation on this. So we go into episode 8, The Return. Bo-Katan and her squad retreat from Moff Gideon.
Run away!
And then Grogu, like, leaves them. He runs away with them to begin with, but then he's in his, like, mech suit. And then he kind of, like, stops running because he's going to go after Mando.
He's got to go save Dad.
Upon returning to the Mandalorian flagship, Axe Woe sends the remaining Mandalorians to reinforce the planetary troops. He defends the ship from Imperial TIE squadrons. Meanwhile, Din Djarin escapes from captivity because Grogu helps him. It's really cute. It's really cute how he helps Dad. But he doesn't attack. He defends. He, like, will do things like move weapons out of the way or, like, move the people out of the way with the Force, but he doesn't, like...
His training with Luke was definitely Jedi-focused, pacifist, going back to Obi-Wan saying, "We always use the Force to defend, never to attack." And that's a big...
younglings.
That's a big theme of the prequel era where the Jedi lost their way because they're like these generals in a war, and that's like, never what it was supposed to be about, yeah, right? So... That's interesting. I think you don't really notice it unless you're paying attention because it's a big action scene. But it's Mando's doing all the attacking and Grogu's doing a lot of defending.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of like, "I'm going to hold you back till Dad can deal with you, but I'm not going to attack you." Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they escape from captivity. They seek out Gideon. Din Djarin and Grogu discover the cloning tanks, and they're all clones of Gideon. And all of the clones can use the Force, apparently.
Well, allegedly.
Well, that was the goal. That's why they wanted Grogu in the first place.
Yeah, so eventually Gideon Bond villain monologues about his
he's got clones. A monologuing.
His clones, and he wants to create this like perfect amalgamation of Imperial stormtroopers and Mandalorian warriors. And Jedi or
Force wielding,
So they want the Beskar armor and like the obedience and the Force wielding and
that's not good. That is a bad combination.
Sounds really bad.
So they're all destroyed.
They just blow them up.
Yeah, he's just like, well, because they haven't come into fruition yet. So he's like,
at least those ones are. But, who knows?
There was a lot of monologuing for something that got blown up right away. I'm just saying. There's a lengthy skirmish between the Mandalorians and the Beskar enhanced stormtroopers. Bo-Katan. Din Djarin, Grogu, and Bo-Katan make a final stand against Gideon, and they kind of like layer on top of each other. It's like they're working together as a team, and Grogu saves them by Force bubbling.
There's a really cool fight scene. Like Gideon's in his power armor that's very Darth Vader inspired.
Yeah. Oh, very. Oh, and he even destroys the Darksaber.
Yeah. He crushes the Darksaber up like it's nothing. And this whole time, Axe is piloting the big cruiser down into the base, like all kamikaze style. Because he wrecked all the TIE fighters, but they wrecked him as well. And
so he's bringing the ship down,
And we're not sure. It kind of looks like he's like just gonna kamikaze it, and whatever. But he's smart. I'm like, "You have a jetpack, dude. Get out of there."
And then he's like, "Oh, I have a jetpack."
Yeah, he remembers. Yeah, yeah. But so that's fine.
He wants to make sure it's hitting where it's gonna hit. So yeah, that was good on Woves, by the way.
Yeah, really cool. And they're blowing up the base with that big ship.
Yeah,
and. Of course, the big fight scene with Moff Gideon's happening right in the base.
Oh,
and
that's
kind of dangerous. And they're fighting back and forth, and this thing's crashing, and Moff Gideon gets blowed up.
Yep. So basically, the blast from this like giant ship crashing Big explosion.
It absolutely incinerates them. And then, of course, you're like, oh no, Mando and Bo and Grogu are there. But yes.
Force bubble.
Force bubble, which was very cool.
Good job, Grogu. And Bo's like, whoa. And Mando's like, good son.
Yeah.
After the battle, the Mandalorians restart the Great Forge. This is like a cool moment with some with their helmets off and some with their helmets on. They've all come together. Din Djarin formally adopts Grogu because they're all by the Living Waters at that point. And the boy, Vizsla's son, who was, he was...
They kept trying to get him to say the creed, and he kept getting attacked by creatures.
Because, again, location, location, location.
Yeah. Yeah. This time, back on Mandalore, he doesn't get attacked by a creature, which I was almost like, I don't know, there's some stuff in that water. But no, he gets to, he formally becomes an apprentice then, and that's how they do that. And
yes.
And Mando wants Grogu to become an apprentice, but yes. Of course, Grogu can't speak yet.
Right, so because he can't speak, he cannot say the creed. And the Mando's like, well, so would his, like, guardian be able to do it? And she says his parents could, his family can, but they are far away. And so Mando then formally adopts Grogu. Yay! And so he's able to do that.
He becomes Din Grogu.
So he's now Din Grogu, and he's going to follow him, become his apprentice. And since Mando is still the bounty hunter, technically...
Yeah, he wasn't. I don't think he was ever kicked out of the guild.
No, I don't think he was. So he says that is what his trade is, and so he is going to teach him to do that. We, after that happens, which is very cute, Din Djarin takes up contract work with Carson, Teva, however you, Kim's convenience guy.
Yeah, he goes to the Republic bar and says, yeah, I can do some work for you, and you can pay me, And he's like, well, the New Republic would never go for that. Like, he's like, they don't have to know.
Yeah, he's like, you've got more than you can handle, and just I'll do it on the side, and it's fine. And so there's like, oh, okay. And as a part of a payment, they have a whole bunch of droid heads in the bar, and he takes an IG-11 head. And then he Din Djarin and Grogu, Din Grogu now, move into the cabin on the outskirts of Navarro's capital, which is the one that Greef Karga originally offered him. And he is
very Western.
Very Western. And he gives IG-11, who is rebuilt, to serve as Navarro's new marshal, because that was one thing that Karga kept wanting Mando to do.
And Mando's like, no, I'm going to be busy off planet a lot of the time. Yeah. So I can't.
And so he had this really cute little moment with them, like in their little cabin, and Grogu's like playing in the water, making frogs fly. And I'm like, oh, he's going to torture and eat them. And Mando's like sitting with his feet up, like watching. Yeah. It's so Western-y.
Yeah, it's very, very Western, which was like the inspiration for the show in the first place. So it's
very much The Man with No Name.
Kind of going back to that original inspiration of a Star Wars Western. Yeah. And
it
we'll
actually
see.
Felt like this. A lot of people thought the series was ending there, actually.
It felt like a place that they could end it.
But apparently season 4 is in production. Of course it is. You don't want to stop milking that as much as you can. But I have a feeling it's going back episodic.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, they can just randomly... They're in a place now where there's not, like, a huge overarching plot. They can just randomly show up. Like, maybe there's an episode in Bo-Katan where she, like, reconnects with them or something.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens with the Ahsoka show coming up. That's the next thing on the docket, and that's going to have a big overarching story. So
exactly.
Who knows? Allegedly, this is all building to a big Avengers-level crossover movie that Dave Filoni is going to write and direct.
Which sounds really cool. So I'm sure we'll see them there, because, of course, we want more Grogu. Everyone wants more Grogu.
Yeah.
Including people who make, like, stuffies and, like, all the merch.
Yes. Little merch sales. Yeah. Grogu. Okay. So, there is one theory that I want to discuss from this episode.
Okay.
Known as the mustache theory.
Okay.
Have you heard this?
No.
If you remember when we first see Moff Gideon in season 1.
Yes.
And season 2.
Yes.
He has a mustache.
Mm-hmm.
In this season, he does not have a mustache.
He does not.
Also, his clones do not have mustaches.
Ooh, okay. Mm-hmm.
The theory goes that the the Moff Gideon that we saw in season 3 is a clone.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it's a little bit grasping at straws.
You know what?
He also could have just shaved.
No, that's not easier. I like that theory. I have heard the theory, of course, that Moff Gideon is not gone. We didn't see his dead body. First of all, if you don't see the dead body, he can come back. So that was kind of what was going on. The mustache theory makes sense. What do you think of this?
I like it. Mm-hmm. It does seem, because the mustache thing would have been very easy to keep and then have that be the distinguishing factor of the original versus the clones.
Right.
And then the fact that they were all clean shaven.
That is interesting.
I don't know. I don't know what to think.
I think he was a clone. I like it. I think the mustache is something that is totally on brand for what, like, the little hint that they would
do. A little bit of a hint. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Any other crazy theories you want to discuss with this one? What do you think of the armor? Because armor was one of my favorite or most interesting things about this season. Do you think she's just like straight up, I believe in Mandalore and everything, or is there still something sneaky about her?
No, I think she's full on. I kind of hope that they don't like try and make a big twist with her, like she's some character that we've known from before. No, I think she should just be a really devout, orthodox Mandalorian true believer.
I like it.
And basically going to be the shaman type of role for the new civilization.
I like it, and I totally agree. Okay, so other big theories. Any other big... Oh, where do you think we're going to see Elia Kane again? I was thinking of all the loose ends, you know?
I think in Ahsoka.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Works out well with... we need to watch Rebels.
Yeah, I think she's going to hook up and work for Thrawn. Like, she's just clearly very ambitious and wants to make people feel pain and
psychopath.
She wants the power and will be on the winning side kind of thing. So
Any other crazy theories in this one? Not so much. I like the mustache theory though.
Yeah, the mustache theory.
I'm going with that one. I a lot of those theories I always feel are like grasping at straws, and maybe this one is, but it also seems on brand. So So that means that is our show this week. Thank you, El Mule, who's responsible for the custom theme song you heard at the top of this show and all of our shows. You can find a link to his work at our website at disneya.wixsite.com/podcast, where you can also find a link to our social media accounts. That is Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can also find Disney A episodes on your favorite podcast streaming platforms and your not favorite podcast streaming platforms, for that matter, as well as our YouTube channel, Adventures A. Please rate, review our podcast. It helps us a lot, algorithms and such. Next episode, we're finally doing that little Oswald episode I was talking about. It's going to be a short one. Like you said, you're going to a bachelor party.
I still don't know when the heck we're going to manage this.
I don't know, but we're going to figure something out. So a little bit of history about Oswald for Disney's 100th and the Year of the Rabbit. It's going to be a short one, but hey, it's every once in a while we do one of those. Here's a bunch of information things. So, I'm Krista.
I'm Brandon.
And until the next adventure, TTFN, ta-ta for now. Thanks for listening to Disney A.
She's like... That's the scientific term for it.